We, Yvonne and I, live on a river up in Murphy, North Carolina, or near Murphy. And occasionally we see people in the river who are out there panning for gold. And sometimes they get really serious about it. They get machines and they have them on floats and they take them down the river with these big suction hoses and they work the river bottom, sucking up. And it's not very deep. You can wade in it up to your knees. If you step in a hole, it might go over your head at one point or at least up to your neck. But they wade along and they suck up the material and they filter it out and they look for little nuggets of gold. There are other people that take pans just like you've seen in the Old West, and it's not really the Old West, it's now. They're panning for gold and they find little nuggets of gold in the midst of the stream, in the midst of the rocks. And there are actually some people that make about $20,000 to $30,000 a year up there just working the river, panning for gold and mining for gold out of the river. That kind of gold is called placer gold. I don't know how it got that name, but to me it just means it's just placed here and there. But I don't know if that's the correct reason for the name, but that's how they find it. It's called placer gold. It comes down the streams, and you can find it accumulated in low spots and areas, and they work it until they find it. And interestingly, the Valley River, it's called the Valley River because I believe, probably because it flows through the valley that we're in. But that river has a source, and it brings that gold with it, and it just tumbles along the bottom until the gold is heavier than everything else, until it finally finds a low spot and accumulates there. And those that are wise go out there looking for it. At least if they want to go through the trouble, because, you know, you can spend an entire year to accumulate that amount of gold. But the Valley River has a source. If you follow it back through the valley, it winds through the valley, passes by Andrews, North Carolina, and then somewhere in the mountains east of there, there is a spring, possibly, or several springs, and it comes out and accumulates and finally turns into the Valley River and flows down past our backyard. And there is a river of God. It also has a source, and if you follow it back, you will find that it'll wind through life and come finally to a spring, which is the heart of God. The scripture says that it flows out from his heart under his throne and then goes out, and everywhere it goes, they shall live. Everywhere it goes, they shall live. But interestingly, in that river of God, there are also little nuggets of gold that you can find. If you're willing to dig for them, if you're willing to look for them, they are there. You can take a machine or you can take a pan and you can go out, sift through it, and you will find treasures that have flown out from the heart of God and have accumulated a lot of times in low places. So it just takes someone with a little bit of willingness to dig, to pan, to sift, until all the dross and all the dirt and all the other stones just flow away because they're lighter and the gold remains, and then they can gather that for themselves. So this morning we're going to take a look at just a little nugget that I believe God allowed me to find just a week ago or so, a short amount of time ago. And I thought, okay, I want to share this. When I get down to Atlanta, I want to share it with you, and it's yours. You know, we sang that one of the songs earlier, and it says that all will see the greatness of our God. All will see the greatness of our God. That line caught my attention today because it has a thought in it that's related to what I want to share with you this morning. Is it morning still? It's afternoon by now, probably. That I just want to share with you. And that's found in Genesis chapter 16, if you want to turn there. Genesis chapter 16. This is the story and that portion of scripture that talks about Hagar and Sarai and Abram and their effort to bring forth the promise of God on their own effort. You know the story. Sarai was barren. She couldn't have children, so she gave Abram her maid to go in and have a child. And I guess the custom was that the child who was born would be part of their family. So this is a little bit, I want to share with you a little bit about Hagar. You know, she had to have been just a young girl. She was a maid servant. And she was a slave. She was a servant. She had no choice of her own. She had nothing that she could do other than to obey. And she had, I presume, was a good maid, a good servant, had learned to submit, which is a key for you and I, something to remember. She had learned to submit, and she must have been because she was picked by Sarai out of all of her servants and of all of her maids, for they were wealthy, to be the one that she would give to her husband to bring forth this child. So she says there in verse 2, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." So Abram agreed. And so after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. And she slept with Hagar. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. And unfortunately for Hagar, as soon as she realized she was pregnant, she got lifted up in her pride. And she began to, as it says there, that when she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. So right there, she left her place as a servant. And she took what you would call a bad attitude towards her mistress. And she began to despise her. Her heart was filled with pride. "I'm pregnant and you're not." And she began to despise the barren woman who was her master, her mistress. And then Sarai said to Abram, "You're responsible for this wrong," yeah, right, "that I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms and now she knows she's pregnant and she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." Well, Abram, he said, hey, do what you want. Said, she's your servant. You know, don't come after me about this. This was your idea. Do whatever you want with your servant. And so Sarai did. And what she did was she mistreated, as it says here in this version, that Sarai mistreated Hagar. Now, you need to understand that word mistreated. There's a whole lot more than that. She just gave her what we used to call in Hawaii the stink eye. You know, she didn't just give her one of those looks. She didn't just, say a few things to her. This was a slave. And so in that little word mistreated, there's a whole lot of things going on. I mean, you can speculate the way they treated slaves. There could have been beatings. There could have been all sorts of things. Locking her up. I mean, I have no idea. It's just speculation. But at any rate, it was more than just a mean look. She mistreated her. And something to understand about this is that Hagar kind of got herself in this position by allowing her heart to be lifted up in pride and beginning to despise her mistress openly. So Hagar is a little responsible for this place that she ended up in. She obviously is not responsible for Sarai's sin of mistreating her, but she kind of brought this on herself. And so being in the position of a slave and being very mistreated now, she's got to be severely mistreated, she fled. She ran away. That's a big step. So she ran away from her place. She left her place when her heart was lifted up in pride, and then she ran away from it all, from all this affliction and all this mistreatment and everything that she had ended up in as a result of her heart being lifted up in pride, and she fled into the desert. She couldn't stand, couldn't take, couldn't suffer through any more of this mistreatment, so she fled, as it says there in verse 6. So there she is out in the wilderness. She had fled from her affliction. I don't know about you, but I have many times wanted to flee from my affliction. Either by attitude or physically. I recall a period of time in my life in Hawaii when we were living out there that we were going through it. Anybody here ever gone through it? Nah, you don't have to raise your hand. If you're breathing, you've gone through it. And it seemed like God just wouldn't allow us up. It seemed like his hand was upon us, just holding us in place. There was a period of 7 years when we couldn't go anywhere and do anything. You know, we just were under that and in that place of affliction. Now, don't think that I didn't many times think to myself, boy, we need to get out of here. We need to find a way out of this place of affliction, out of this place of turmoil. Of course, a lot of it we bring on ourselves, but nevertheless, it's painful. You know that. And it can get to you to where you just want to get away from it, one way or the other. God taught me in that place. He taught me to yield myself to his hand, to submit myself under the mighty hand of God that was holding me there, and that in time, as Richard said, the promise is coming. In time, he would lift me up. And so I learned to submit my hope, and I finally came to the place where I realized, you know, I can't even try to make it happen like Abraham and Sarai were doing here. I can't try to make the promise of God happen. I have to just simply submit. I remember my dad saying, when I was out of work for a while, my dad called me up. He was an engineer at Boeing, and he said, listen, just come move to Seattle, and I'll get you a good job, and you'll be fine. And, oh, man, that was tempting. But I've yielded myself again. And I said back to my father, my dad, Dad, I can't come. I can't come. I can't leave because there's something I have to find out about God. I've heard it preached. I've heard it taught. And I have to find out if it's true. Will God do what he said he would do? That is, lift me up and begin to bless me. I had to find that out for myself. So I stayed there and found out. And interestingly, Hagar, now who's this slave girl, who is fled, has run away from her place of affliction, first in her heart and now physically she's run away from it. She finds herself by a stream in that desert, by a little spring in that desert, having fled out into the wilderness. And there she is by a stream. As it says there in verse 7, that's there. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. And this was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. The angel of the Lord found her near a spring. Hagar had no knowledge of the value of the spring that she was about to step into. Her affliction drove her out into the wilderness, and there she was waiting by that stream, and it was there that the angel of God found her. The angel of God in the Old Testament always speaks of the Lord himself manifesting himself and coming in a form and speaking to Hagar. Now, you just have to stop for a minute and think. Here this little girl was, young woman, sitting out in the desert, having run away, fled from her affliction, sitting by this spring, hoping to survive all this, not knowing really where to go and what to do, probably, just sitting out there. And in that place, in the midst of her deepest affliction and struggle, it was there that all of a sudden God spoke to her. Now, I want you to think for a minute. This girl, she had no knowledge of God. This speaking was totally unexpected. She's just sitting by the stream, having suffered what she suffered and still suffering. And there she sits by the stream, and all of a sudden, totally unexpected, a voice speaks to her. I would think at this point in her life that Hagar didn't even know that there was a God. She heard about God from Abraham and Sarah, but she didn't know. She didn't know that she knew that she knew. She just heard about God. She'd been sitting in church and going to Sunday school, and so to speak, and just had heard about the things of God, but she herself didn't know. And now out of the blue, so to speak, God spoke to her. Now she didn't find him. He found her. He found her sitting out there by the stream. And just all of a sudden and unexpectedly, he spoke to her. Now, I don't know if you've ever had an experience like that, but I have. Back when I was a hippie, I was an atheist. And I was sitting up there in Boone, North Carolina one day doing yoga on a back porch. And I was sitting out there for hours doing yoga. You know, aum, aum. And I was concentrating, I probably have told you this story before, I was concentrating on the bug sounds and the leaf sounds, and I had no knowledge of God, zero. There wasn't a God as far as I was concerned. I not only didn't know there was a God, I was one of those who said there wasn't a God. And so there I am doing yoga, sitting on this back porch. And after about several hours, I think it was about 4 hours, all of a sudden, a voice spoke to me and said, and I can still quote that sentence after probably around 40 years now, he said, "I am the God that made all those spirits and you." And there I was, like Hagar, nearer to a stream of God than I had any knowledge of. And all of a sudden, that God spoke to me. Now, I was an atheist, but I got up off of that back porch and I went into that house and I told those other hippies, God just spoke to me. I knew it instantly. I knew that there was a God. He just spoke to me. Just like he did to Hagar. And now from the very first word and the very first realization that this angel of the Lord was speaking to her, she knew that there was a God. Just as ignorant as I was, she knew that there was a God. Her eyes were opened, so to speak. The eyes of her understanding were instantly opened. And she knew that there was a God. Because here he was speaking to her. It says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai. Interesting what he called her. She knew. There, you know, when Isaiah saw the Lord high and lifted up and sitting on his throne, and his train filled the temple, and his eyes were open to the glory of God, what was his first reaction? Woe is me, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. Hagar saw God. And when he said to her, Hagar, servant of Sarah, she knew. She knew what her place was. This unexpected voice that spoke to her, this voice of God that she didn't know, who found her, she didn't find him, he found her, but now she knows what? She doesn't know all that there is to know about God, but she knows the most important thing that you can realize at any point in your life, and that is, he is. He is. He is the I am that I am. He is. And so he asked her this question. This first question was, Sarai, thou servant of, or Hagar, thou servant of Sarai, where have you come from? First question, where have you come from? You know, interestingly, that would also tie into not just the fact that she'd gone through getting captured and being made into a slave. She was from Egypt. And being then finally mistreated, given to this man to bring forth a child, and then mistreated by his wife, and all this affliction that she had gone through. And now this fleeing out into the desert. This question, where have you come from? Interesting question. I think we need to stop sometimes and think, where have we come from? Where have I come from? What have I been through? What has brought me to this place? And then an even more important question, and where are you going? Where are you going? Okay, you can look back, see all the affliction, all the difficulties, all the trials, all the struggles, all the victories, all the failures, all the pains, all the afflictions that have moved you to this place beside this spring in the desert of your life. You can look back and see, and you can answer that question, where have you come from? But he asked a far more penetrating question. Where are you going? I read something on a Facebook entry of somebody that Yvonne and I know from the church in Hawaii who has gone through cancer, is still going through cancer, but has been given by God a ministry in Korea and is very fruitful in that ministry, being very fruitful. But this woman wrote something and posted it on her, just this one line, which I wrote down here. And it relates to this question, where are you going? And she wrote this, and I can see where it was coming from all this affliction and difficulty that she was going through. Still, is she pressed on in her ministry? There in Korea is just having phenomenal success, opening doors, and revivals in with lawyers and their colleges and just all kinds of things that's going on over there. And she wrote this, hunger drives us to consecration. Consecration drives us to holiness. Holiness drives us to glory. Do you know where you're going? Hunger after God, it's true, drives us to consecration. To consecrate ourselves as you did this morning, as we all did this morning, to touch God, to meet with God. That consecration to God drives us to holiness. And holiness will drive us to glory, drive us into the very presence of God. Hagar, you little runaway, do you know where you're going? Do you know where you're going? And then the angel of the Lord tells her these really tough words, but they are the truth. He said to her in verse 9, go back. Go back to your mistress and submit to her. Go back. You've run away. You first ran away in your heart when you let pride lift up your heart. And now you've run away physically. You're out here in this wilderness sitting by this stream where I have come to you. And he says to her, Sarah, or Hagar, go back. Go back to that place that you fled from. Submit yourself. And he follows it with promise. For he says, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. Now, we know that these descendants have been a real problem for Israel all these years. However, what we're looking at this morning is this one person's life. This one girl's life. Who didn't even know there was a God, except by what she had heard, what she'd overheard Abraham and Sarah talking about possibly, or what they may have taught, tried to teach her. And she was an Egyptian where they worshiped the sun and they worshiped other things. And now all of a sudden, here she is in a conversation with the living God, who is speaking to her at a very low place in her life. And her eyes are opened to all. There is an interesting thing about having your eyes open is all of a sudden you get 20/20 hindsight. Now all of a sudden you can look back through all your life and see all the places that God had been dealing with you to bring you to that little spot in the wilderness where he could come to you and he could speak to you. And your eyes would be opened to the reality that he is. He is. You will never be the same. Hagar would never be the same. Anybody that has ever come to that place in their life where God has revealed himself to them will never be the same. You can have fears and doubts about things, about whether this will happen or that will happen, or those things that God has promised you will happen. But you will always know from that day on that he is. That he is. And that he is a rewarder of those that seek him. So he said to her, go back to your mistress and submit. Submit under the mighty hand of God. Because now, in her submission, it wasn't just putting up with a mean boss, but she was submitting herself under the hand of God if she would go back. No longer was this boss, this affliction, this difficulty in her life just happening and it was bad and, oh, I want to get out of here. But now it's God working in her life. She knows that He is and that He has spoken to her and said, go back and submit. And He told her, He gave her a promise, if you do, I'll increase your descendants and they will be too numerous to count. For there is a way. There is the way. And she had run from it, that place of submission. There is a way to come into the promises of God. There's a way to arrive at. Where are you going? Where have you come from? And where are you going? There's a way to arrive at the promises that God has spoken to you. And that is submission. Submission to where He has you and what He's doing in your life. There is a way to these promises and to increase. Submission. Go back and submit. Go back and give yourself to your mistress, and I will increase you there. That's His promise. Submit yourself under the mighty hand of God, and He will lift you up. He will lift you up. Others have seen God and their lives were changed completely. Remember when Job went through all of the difficulties? Anybody who's ever read Job has got to have some sympathy for the guy. And the difficulties and the trials and the issues and the afflictions that he went through and his so-called friends and the whole issue. And do you remember what he said in the end? He said, I heard about you, Lord, with the hearing of my ear. But now I have seen you. Now I have seen you. And I repent in sackcloth and ashes. Now I have seen you. I've already shared with you Isaiah. Isaiah was a very judgmental man. You read the first five chapters of Isaiah. He judged this and judged that. And then he saw the Lord. In the year that King Uzziah died, that was a very low spot in his life. He saw the Lord high and lifted up over everything, over it all. And his train filled the temple, his influence, his whole being filled all that there was. And Isaiah's eyes were opened to see this, and his life was changed. And he began to, instead of spewing out judgment to this and judgment to that, he began to talk about a counselor, wonderful, mighty God, whose rulership would rule over all the earth. He began to see this child born of a virgin. His whole life changed when he saw the Lord high and lifted up over all things. And he wrote some of the most beautiful visions of this God and what he saw. We talked about that river that flows with those gold nuggets in it, that Valley River up there where you can go out there and pan for those gold nuggets. And this river of God that flows and that we can also step into is filled with treasure. And that river flows from the heart of God. It was opened on the cross when the heart of Christ was pierced. And that river began to flow into our lives. It didn't begin there. It just was revealed there and began to come forth. It began in the very essence of who God is. His mercy, His grace, His love for you. It begins in who God is. And when your eyes are open to see that He is, somehow you just see all these things. Who He is. And so Hagar, based on this encounter, gave God a name. This God that she now knows is, she gave Him a name. The name that she gave Him, as it says in verse 13, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God that sees me." Oh, what wonderful comfort. You are the God that sees me. Do you know that He sees you? He always sees you. The scripture says that the Lord found her by the spring, but that's just the words that were used. He didn't just find her. He knew exactly where she was all the time. He saw her. He saw her when she was born in Egypt. He saw her when she got captured. He saw her when she began this life of affliction as a slave girl. He saw all these things. He has never abandoned her. All will see how great is our God. And so she gave Him this name. You are the God that sees me. What comfort. Whatever you're walking through, whatever you go through in your life, He sees you. And I don't know why He's waiting in your life for whatever deliverance that you hope for and are praying for and that God may have even spoken to you, but He sees it. He sees it and He knows. And He's waiting for that day, whatever day that is for you, when you're sitting beside that stream in a desert place, and there He will speak to you. So she said to Him, and she called Him by this name, "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." Hallelujah. I have now seen the one who sees me. And as it says in verse 14, that is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. Beer Lahai Roy. The well, the actual translation of that is, the well of the living one who sees me. We worship this morning a living God. The living God who sees you. He sees you. He sees you where you are. And all the riches that spring forth from His heart are available to me and to you. And all we need to do is to step in that river. Step in that river with our little pan and begin to sift. Sift through some of the rocks, some of the stones, some of the sediment. And we will begin to find these little beautiful nuggets of inestimable value. Because He is the God who sees us and knows exactly where we are. So she called the name. So the name of that place ever after she had named God, "You are the God who sees me." And notice that that's in the present tense. It's not "you were the God that saw me," but "you are the God who sees me." Sees who I am and what I'm going through. And then she said, "For I have now seen, my eyes have been opened to see this one who sees me." She'll never be the same. Never be the same. And so the name of that place, the name of that place in her life, and at that well, and at that time in her walk with in this life, that place was called the Well of the Living One Who Sees Me. And so this morning, I just want to invite you to begin to sift through the sediment, to begin to pan in that river until you begin to find those nuggets, until you begin to find those deposits of the living God. You can gather them in your jar, bring them and show me. For you will begin, if you begin to sift through it, in that water, that river of living water that touches, that wherever it touches, it shall live, you'll begin to find gold. You'll begin to find wealth. Because He is the living God who sees you, and He knows who you are.